Welcome to Idiom America, the podcast where we take a closer look at those linguistic jewels, idioms, those words and phrases that have a figurative meaning, one that doesn't match the literal meaning of the individual words. And we're back after a bit of a break, as I've been busy with work and some other stuff, the best of which was going out to Arkansas to experience the total solar eclipse on April 8th. I backpacked into a gravel bar on the Buffalo National River and spent a couple days camping there and enjoying a family of river otters and nature, the most stunning manifestation of which was the eclipse. Most stunning manifestation of nature I've ever seen, in fact, and one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. Sitting there next to the river with a clear blue sky and bright sun above, no one around for miles, watching the colors change as the trees and rivers and stones begin to glow with an eerie light, hearing the difference in the sounds of the birds and then the frogs and the crickets, feeling the air get cooler on my skin. It was the first total eclipse I'd ever seen, and even though I knew more or less what was coming, it was still totally unexpected, astonishing, overwhelming, the kind of thing that makes you literally gasp with surprise and awe when the moon blots out the sun and it goes dark and you can stare up at the sun and see that diamond ring around it, see the moon in a new light, the power of it to block out the sun, see Venus shining brightly in the middle of the day and Jupiter too, and even a couple stars, and you feel in the presence of something greater than us and more powerful than us, and you feel insignificant, a small thing in the universe. Yet at the same time, you feel connected, like you're part of something so much greater, something unimaginably vast and grand and eternal. And that was the most special thing about the eclipse, the way it made you feel connected to the universe, part of it, in a really visceral way, not just this intellectual understanding of your place in the universe, but a physical and emotional and spiritual understanding. It was just a few minutes of totality, but they were a euphoric few minutes where I just kept hoping it'll last longer, not wanting it to end, just struck with the greatness of it all. And as soon as the sun came back out, I walked along the river, seeing the crescent shadows on the sand as the leaves filtered the light and projected the crescent sun onto the ground, coming across to Day's little mole that had come out thinking it was nighttime and who now is just completely confused and stunned. And I could relate. After the 2017 eclipse, which I observed as a partial eclipse on the National Mall here in Washington, D.C., after all the time I'd spent peering up at the bright August sun through those eclipse glasses, watching this black disc slowly sliding across the sun and then wandering around the mall looking at the crescent shadows and being hyper-focused on the small changes in the quality and intensity of sunlight, I described myself to someone as sun-drunk when I got back to the office in a bit of a daze. But perhaps a better word for what I was feeling as I was walking along the Buffalo River in the aftermath of the eclipse would have been sun-struck, affected or touched by the sun, or more accurately, more figuratively, idiomatically, moonstruck. Which is defined as crazed, suffering from a psychological disturbance or mental illness, supposedly due to the influence of the moon. Or, in a second definition, dreamily dazed or distracted, especially as a result of being in love. And one of the first uses, if not the first use, of this idiom moonstruck was in John Milton's 1667 epic work, Paradise Lost, where he gets to listing some of the conditions that are attributable to original sin, such as ghastly spasm or racking torture, qualms of heartsick agony, convulsions, epilepsies, intestine stone and ulcer, demonic frenzy, moping melancholy, pining atrophy, and moonstruck madness. And back then it was believed that a lot of mental illness came from the moon. Think of the words lunatic and lunacy, which come from the Latin word for the moon, luna. And it wasn't until the mid-19th century that the word moonstruck started to take on the dreamily romantic meaning that moonstruck's more commonly used for today. In addition to sunstruck and moonstruck, we have the idiom starstruck, to be fascinated or greatly impressed by famous people, and thunderstruck, to be extremely surprised or shocked. But that's about all I can think of with combining natural phenomena and the suffix struck. At any rate, I thought moon idioms would make for a good episode, so let's take a look at some more. But first, while we're on Milton and moon idioms, throwback to the episode on silver idioms seems appropriate, because if you're like me, it often takes hearing a thing a few times to remember it, and even then, I'm pretty bad with it. And the idiom here is silver lining, as in every cloud has its silver linings, and this one actually arose from the moonlight shining through a cloud from a 1634 poem by John Milton. Was I deceived, or did a sable cloud turn forth her silver lining on the night? I did not err, there does a sable cloud turn forth her silver lining on the night and casts a gleam over this tufted grove. And the moonlight casting its silvery gleam through a dark cloud on a tufted grove is a beautiful image. And you might be interested to know that the blue or silvery color of moonlight is due to something called the Purkinje effect, which is named after the Czech polymath Jan Evangelista Purkinje, who discovered it in 1819. And basically the Purkinje effect or shift is the tendency for the peak luminance sensitivity of the eye to shift toward the blue end of the color spectrum at low illumination levels as part of the eye's process of dark adaptation. In other words, as it gets darker, our eyes adjust their cones and rod system to become more sensitive to the blue end of the color spectrum and less sensitive to the red end, which gives moonlight its bluish or silvery quality. And incidentally, a total solar eclipse is a great time to observe an optical illusion from the Purkinje effect. A few minutes before totality, surroundings start to take on a grayish sepia tone due to bright reds becoming darker, faded, and almost black, with blues and greens becoming more vibrant. And usually this Purkinje effect unfolds slowly as day gives way to night and the eyes will slowly adjust. But because the effect happens so much more quickly with the total solar eclipse, it's much more noticeable. Some people even recommend wearing a red and green striped shirt during a total eclipse so that you can better observe the changes in the color's saturation levels. But back to moonlight. There's a second idiomatic meaning to moonlight, and that's to hold a second job in addition to a regular one. For a dancer, to moonlight as a waitress, for example. It's pretty easy to guess that the origination of this one likely comes from the idea of working by the light of the moon in addition to one's shift at a regular job during the daytime. And it's been used since the 19th century to refer to working extra hours to earn additional income outside of your primary employment. And in this same vein is moonshine, whose meaning can be straightforward. Just like the sun has sunlight and sunshine, so too the moon. But moonshine also, of course, refers to high-proof liquor that's typically made or distributed illegally, also known as shine, hooch, Mountain Dew, homebrew, firewater, bootleg, white lightning, popsicle, rock gut, and so on. And like moonlight, it's similarly easy to guess that the term comes from the fact that these illegal spirits were made under the light of the moon, as moonshiners would work at night to avoid detection from the authorities. And that was indeed the case. And the term moonshiner appears to have arisen in England in the 18th century, and it could refer to any illegal activities under the cover of darkness, like robbery, burglary, grave robbing. And people probably most associate moonshining with the Prohibition era in the U.S. in the 1920s, but its history goes right back to the founding of the country. Take the Whiskey Rebellion that began in 1791. After the Revolutionary War, the U.S. needed tax revenue to pay all its war bills, and taxing liquor was a good way to get it, which didn't go over well with all the many frontier farmers who relied on moonshine manufacturing to supplement their income. You can get a lot more money from your corn if you turn it into whiskey first. So the tax collectors the government would send out would often get attacked, tarred and feathered, and the tension between the government and its citizens eventually boiled over into armed resistance and a conflict that came to be known as the Whiskey Rebellion, which ended after a few fairly big battles involving several thousand rebels, when George Washington in 1794 personally led a coalition of 13,000 militia troops into western Pennsylvania, which was the center of the rebellion in America's frontier country at the time. And this massive show of force ended things fairly peacefully, with hundreds being arrested. Kind of a detour there, but it's pretty wild to think about a president doing that nowadays. Think Joe Biden driving a tank, personally leading troops into battle against rebellious U.S. citizens. One of the most commonly used moon idioms is once in a blue moon, which means something that occurs rarely. Once in a blue moon, he says something that actually makes some sense. Although the moon usually looks white, sometimes yellow, and rarely red, the moon can actually appear blue, although it is indeed rare, and usually happens after major volcanic eruptions like Krakatoa in 1883. Or even sometimes when you get huge forest fires that blow up enough dust into the atmosphere. But it doesn't seem like the phrase has ever had anything to do with the moon actually looking blue. And instead, there are a few definitions for this one. And the most common one nowadays that you've probably heard of is that blue moon refers to the second full moon in a calendar month. So if June has two full moons, the second is known as a blue moon. And this occurs once every couple of years. But this definition actually only arose in 1946 in an article in an astronomy magazine, and it came from a misunderstanding of an earlier definition of a blue moon, which referred to when a season had more than three moons, say in autumn with four full moons. So the moon takes about 29 and a half days to complete a full phase, known as a lunar phase or lunar month. And so 12 lunar months is 354 days. So every 2.7 years, there's going to be an extra full moon falling in some part of the year, which is what we call a blue moon when you get more than three in a season. But the first usage of this appears around 1528 when some guys called William Roy and Jeremy Barlow published and circulated a flyer against members of the clerics. Arguing that, oh, churchmen are wily foxes. If they say the moon is blue, we must believe that it is true. So it was originally used to mean something ridiculous. Everyone knows that the moon isn't blue, and so it was used here to refer to priests who required their flock to believe in statements regardless of how false or ridiculous they were. So in the 16th century, saying he'd argue the moon is blue was like saying he'd try to convince you that black is white. The concept that a blue moon was absurd eventually led to a second meaning in the 18th century, that meaning was never. So I'll marry you when the moon is blue, meant that's not happening. And from there it evolved to refer to an event that occurs rarely, not one that would never occur. And one with a similar meaning in centuries past that you don't hear as much these days is the moon is made of green cheese, which was actually one of the most popular proverbs back in the 16th and 17th century English literature. And it was used to refer to the most ridiculous thing imaginable, an outrageous absurdity, or to highlight one's utter disbelief or incredulity about something that someone else has said or believes. He thinks he's going to win the race. Yeah, right, and the moon is made of green cheese. And this one also dates back to the early 16th century, and it should be noted that the green here refers not to the color, but to the cheese's newness or under-ripened state. So if you look at a wheel of a green or a fresh cheese where the whey's not been pressed out of it yet, it does look quite similar to a full moon. But people understood that despite the similar appearance, the moon obviously wasn't made of green cheese. So the saying had the extra benefit of saying that despite a surface appearance of plausibility, everyone knows it's ridiculous. And likening the moon to cheese has a long history. There's a medieval Slavic fable in which a ravenous wolf is chasing a fox, hoping to score an easy meal. And the clever fox convinces the wolf instead that the moon's reflection on a nearby pond is actually a wheel of cheese floating on its surface. And that if the wolf drinks all the water, it'll get the tasty treat. And so the wolf eventually drinks too much and bursts, and the fox is left alive and victorious. So if the moon's not made of cheese, what is it made out of? Well, it turns out similar stuff to the Earth. In fact, the prevailing theory for the moon's origin is that it formed around 50 million years after the solar system formed, when a Mars-sized planet crashed into the Earth and blasted material into orbit above the Earth. The moon's only a little over 1% of the Earth's mass, however, so its gravity isn't enough to attract and maintain much of an atmosphere. It's nearly a vacuum up there, which leads to some crazy features. For one, the remarkable temperature contrast between the areas where the sun hits the surface and where it doesn't. Without an atmosphere to diffuse and spread the light and heat, there's a sharp dividing line between the light and dark. If you were up there standing on the moon straddling that line, the half of you in the light would be burning up at 250 degrees Fahrenheit, while the half of you in the dark would be freezing at negative 250 degrees. Just in a matter of centimeters, you have that 500 degree temperature contrast. And the lack of atmosphere means lack of wind and water too. So without those to erode and smooth the moon dust up there, it's razor sharp. So if you were to grab a handful, it would shred your hands to pieces. The distance from the moon to the Earth varies from roughly 220,000 miles to 250,000 miles, depending on the orbit. And so the moon can appear about 14% larger when it's closer. So your eyes aren't necessarily playing tricks on you when the moon seems bigger at some times over others. Putting aside, of course, the moon illusion that makes the moon appear larger when it's closer to the horizon. And as an aside, the explanation for this illusion, remarkably, is still being debated, with some possible explanations being the apparent distance theory, the relative size hypothesis, and the angle of regard hypothesis, which I won't get into now because the distance of the moon leads to another idiom, to the moon and back, as in, I love you to the moon and back, referring to deep and boundless love. And this one appears to be a newly formed idiom that really started to gain popularity in the 1990s. And some attribute that to the children's book, Guess How Much I Love You by Sam Bratney, which was published in 1994 and features the characters Big Nut Brown Hair and Little Nut Brown Hair, who express their love for each other using that phrase. And another way of expressing your affection or admiration for someone is to say that you think they hung the moon. That you consider that person to be extraordinary, exceptionally wonderful, the best. She absolutely adores her boss, thinks he hung the moon. And this one starts popping up in America in the 20th century, but didn't become very common until the latter half. And it obviously refers to the idea that someone's so amazing and wonderful that they had the power to put the moon in the sky. And early on, you sometimes heard it in that context, as it was used in conjunction with another idiom, God's own cousin. She thinks that boy of hers is God's own cousin, that he hung the moon. If you're over the moon, you're delighted, thrilled, extremely pleased or happy. He was over the moon when he got his new bike. And the internet tells me that the origin of this one comes from the well-known 16th century nursery rhyme, Hey Diddle Diddle. Hey diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such fun, and the dish ran away with the spoon. So even though the rhyme is nonsense and doesn't seem to have much meaning, it does seem like the cow is having a pretty good time to jump over the moon, so I can see it. And it also matches that feeling you have when you're so elated that you feel like you're floating, and there's no higher place to float with elation than over the moon. You can also shoot for the moon or reach for the moon, meaning to ask for the best or most you could possibly hope for. If you're going to ask for a raise, you might as well shoot for the moon and ask for a promotion, too. Similar ones here are sky's the limit or shoot for the stars. There's a motivational or inspirational quote by Norman Vincent Peale that goes, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. It can also have the connotation of trying to do or get something that's very difficult to do or get. The ambitious young salesman is always reaching for the moon. You also hear the term moonshot, which combines all this into one word. And this connects to the entirely different idiom, shoot the moon, which in card games like hearts or pinochle means to take every point or trick possible. In those games, you normally want to avoid taking points, but if you take them all successfully, then it ends up in your favor. So you hear this one more broadly to refer to a gamble. Many novice investors are trying to shoot the moon by purchasing large amounts of cryptocurrency. And indeed, this one has a long history. Shoot the moon goes back to the early 1800s, and it had a couple of meanings. First, it referred to leaving without paying one's bill, especially to remove household goods by night in order to avoid seizure for rent. And second, it referred to going for broke and card playing, going all in, betting the farm on a risky move. You still occasionally hear shoot the moon used to refer to absconding without paying the rent, but not that much these days. And related to this is the idiom ask for the moon, to make an unreasonable or unrealistic demand. She's asking for the moon. She wants a pony for her birthday. And this one appeared in the mid-1800s, and you'd hear it in different forms back then. Charles Dickens had it as cry for the moon, and William Makepeace Thackeray had it as wish for the moon. Moon on a stick is used in this vein, too, to describe something impossible to obtain, all that one could desire, especially as an unreasonable demand. What more do you want? The moon on a stick? That one was kind of popular in the 1990s. Also related is to promise somebody the moon, to promise someone that you'll do or give something great or wonderful, even though it's not possible. He promised her the moon, so she married him. You hear this one with the stars or the earth or the world or even some combination of them. He promised her the stars and the moon, or he promised her the earth and the stars. A related one that we don't hear much in the U.S., but they get some use in the U.K., is to cast beyond the moon, to consider unlikely or fantastical possibilities. I want you to cast beyond the moon as you dream about your future. May your wildest dreams come true. If you're barking at the moon, you're taking part in a protest that has no chance of reaching success, or you're making appeals in vain. Good luck talking to the principal, but I think you'll just be barking at the moon. I doubt you'll get a better grade. Similarly, if you're howling at the moon, you're spending considerable time and effort fruitlessly in a hopeless endeavor, wasting your time and energy trying to do something impossible. All right, moving quickly now. If you're mooning away, you're either being lazy, languid, idle, as in kids mooning away the summer in front of the TV, or else you're desiring, yearning for, or grieving over someone or something in an intense, melancholy way. Similarly, if you're mooning over somebody, you're spending too much time thinking about or looking at something or someone that you admire and want very much. He spends all his time mooning over a girl at school. If you moon around or moon about, you're depressed, moving around slowly because you're unhappy. We have a harvest moon, the full moon that happens closest to the autumn equinox, when farmers would take advantage of the bright autumn moonlight when it was time to harvest. We have the blood moon, when the moon's in a total lunar eclipse, when the earth is directly between the moon and sun and blocks the sun's light. We have moon-faced, and you can moon somebody by exposing your bare buttocks to them as a prank or insult. There are moon calves and moon rakers, moon flowers and moon seeds, moon fish and moon quakes, moon eyes and moon stones, moon rises, moon sets, and moonscapes, moon walks and moon glades, moon roofs and moon sails, moon bows and moonbeams, moon bathing, and one of my favorites, moon gazing. I know I'll never forget the profound feeling of astonishment, awe, and reverence I felt gazing at the moon as it blocked out the sun and left me a little moony. That's it for moon idioms. Thanks for listening.